Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, guys.
Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Left side three. Remy.
Got it!
Levine, turnaround jumper up. Get it!
Onions! Baby onions!
Put him in the Hall of Fame.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Today's episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. Reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Matt, there's a situation going on in the NBA bubble and could negatively be affecting this Rockets team and more specifically their bench, but a lot of rumors flying about LeBron getting his hands in, doing a little snitching. But first and foremost, man, how are you? How are you enjoying the NBA playoffs?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Yeah, looking forward to game four, Rockets-Lakers tonight. Hopefully the Rockets can even the series. Because I wouldn't mind watching seven games of this, but they're going to have to do it without their sixth man, Daniel House. So he was a late scratch for game three, right? And they were citing personal reasons. So everybody was like, oh man, it's the bubble. What could this possibly be? And then we, well after the fact, finally get this report from Woj that there was maybe a breach in bubble protocol by Daniel House because he invited a female coronavirus testing staffer into his hotel and into his hotel room, which even though these coronavirus testing, you know, employees are a part of the bubble, there are different layers to the bubble and they're not allowed to go into the players' hotel rooms. And so that was the reason that they had to put him on the shelf and not let him play. Supposedly he was this staffer was also at least within physical proximity to Rockets veteran big man Tyson Chandler and one other unnamed player. And the crazy thing about all of this is that, and, you know, maybe it's a little bit conspiracy theory. A person who is known to be a LeBron James friend who has a Twitter account, and LeBron and this person have interacted on Twitter going all the way back to 2012. LeBron wished him a happy 40th birthday not that long ago on Twitter, was joking about what Daniel House did and inviting a female to his hotel room well before the actual NBA reporters in the bubble caught wind of this. So how did he know? Because maybe it was LeBron or somebody in LeBron's camp or somebody on that Lakers team who's playing the Rockets right now and looking for any competitive advantage, heard about this happening, saw this happening, and snitched it to the league.
James again from downtown!
I just gotta ask, like, come on, Daniel House. What are you doing, bruh? What are you doing, man? Like,
we know what he's doing. He's trying to entertain.
What are you doing, bro?
Hotel room.
Come on, man.
Oh man, who's gonna be having a fit about this? Oh, I'm sure. I didn't watch First Take this morning, but I'm sure Stephen A. was just having one off yesterday about that, or this morning about this. It's unbelievable, man. But that's going to hurt the Rockets. Like, the Rockets already depleted as their bench is. They don't have any other options on the bench. And now you're going to ask poor Jeff Green, old Jeff Green, to fill an even bigger role off that bench. I mean, I don't know. Daniel House isn't huge, but they don't have any other big men. Like, who's going to be playing center for 48 minutes? Poor PJ Tucker, poor Jeff Green. I don't know what they're going to do, man, but this is kind of a big loss for this Rockets team.
And PJ Tucker was already looking a little old and tired and hobbled in game three. I think he logged like 45 or 48 minutes or something. And play or you know, not that many. I was thinking about the overtime game, but he played a lot of heavy minutes in game three and had like 3 points, which of course, you know, PJ Tucker does a hell of a lot more for you than just shoot all the things he brings on the defensive end. But he looked banged up at a couple of different times, like maybe he had a sore quad or something at one point in the middle of the game. He's already given you everything he's got. And, you know, like you said, House, it's not like a star player that you're going to miss, but he is a role player. He's an important role player on this team that's trying to come out of a 2-1 hole. And he has already officially been ruled out for tonight as they try and sift through whatever it is that's happened here. And it could be that he has to be ruled out for the remainder of this series. So yeah, it's a big loss for the Rockets. And he, meanwhile, we should say, is denying all of these allegations about bringing a female coronavirus testing staffer to his room and all of this stuff. He's denying all of it. So
he's not.
He, meanwhile, said that they have circumstantial evidence implicating Daniel House on this. So I guess we'll figure out what happens from here. But I just love the thought of the fact that like one of LeBron's buddies knew about this before the reporters in the bubble did.
It's too good. It's too good. Now, before we get to all of our voicemails, our text messages, and our mailbag, Boston-Toronto, man, that game was a whole hell of a lot of fun to watch yesterday. Although, we'll say it was a little salty. I had Boston money line combined with 4 other picks in a parlay that didn't hit because Boston didn't win the game. Some of the officiating, though, again, man, I just don't understand it. These officials have basically determined 3 very, very obvious games that have changed the course and the outcome. What did you think from yesterday's first game in the Eastern Conference, and what do you think going into Game 7?
I mean, I loved it. It was so entertaining. Overtime 1, Overtime 2 was even crazier than Overtime 1. Dude, mad respects to Norman Powell, who, you know, what was the likelihood of that being the guy saving the day? And another, you know, day-saving big shot from OG Anunoby. You know, not quite the same half-a-second buzzer beater to keep them from an 0-3 hole in Game 3, but another big three-pointer late in the OT periods of their game to force a Game 7. It's just been a really fun series to watch. Very evenly matched teams. And I can't wait for Game 7. You know, unfortunately, tonight we're in the situation where we only have one game. I think this is the first time since the bubble started that we have one game on deck tonight because the Bucks Heat series came to an end in Game 5, which is disappointing. But, Jordan, we still do have the NFL debuting tonight. The Super Bowl defending champion Chiefs taking on Deshaun Watson and the Texans. Between that and a 7 o'clock Central Time tip of Lakers Rockets Game 4, plenty of sports to watch, and you know what that means. You should probably be ordering some delivery for dinner tonight. Between
network right.
cycles and incoming emails, you got plenty on your to-do list, and we got games to watch tonight. So give yourself one less thing to worry about and let DoorDash take care of your next meal. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat. Your food will be left safely outside your door with a new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, even the Cheesecake Factory. Right now, our Locked On Bulls listeners can get $5 off and 0 delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download that DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off and 0 delivery fees on that first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store with promo code LOCKEDONNBA. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Today's episode of Locked Up Bulls is also brought to you by RockAuto.com. With the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's almost impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning, like, is your Odyssey an LX or an EX, and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to RockAuto.com at home and right in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds manufacturers. They've got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic car or your daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. And best of all, those prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals as do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much money for the exact same parts? So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Be sure to write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car or truck will ever need, rockauto.com.
Quickly, before we go to text and voicemails, you can hit us up at 331-979-1369 to do that there. Matt, did you hear what Michael Porter Jr. had to say after Denver's loss yesterday?
Yeah, paraphrasing, but essentially he wanted the ball more. He said in order to beat this team, we have to get more people involved than just Jokic and Murray.
It's unbelievable.
Referring to himself.
It's okay, I get the... If he said that in the regular season after a 4 or 5 game losing streak and Jokic and Murray are playing terrible, I get it. I understand it, and good for him. I'd give him props for speaking up, especially a young dude on the team. Dude, you are in the NBA playoffs. You've been playing for a month and a half straight now. These guys have been grinding. And now you're going to turn to Mike Malone. You're going to turn to Mike Malone as a first, really a technically a first year player, and say, hey man, in the playoffs, your boy Michael Porter Jr. needs to be getting the ball more. I need the ball more. I mean, how can you sit up there as a player and think that that's going to turn positive at all in any scenario for you? Even if you are right, how does he think that that's going to better his team, help his team? I don't understand the logic. Maybe it was just pure frustration coming straight out of the game.
I mean, very confident and bold words from somebody who's equally confident and bold about being an anti-vaxxer and a coronavirus is a conspiracy person. It's like, yeah, it's a little out of the norm for someone as fresh to the NBA as MPJ is to be saying things like this on a playoff post-game podium. However, let's also keep in mind that despite his defensive deficiencies, he is, despite his lack of experience, a guy getting post-game podium playoff moments. So clearly people are asking him questions because he's getting some run on this Nuggets team that's fighting like hell to try to figure out how to solve the Clippers. And I don't think they will. And I don't necessarily think that more shots for Michael Porter Jr. is going to solve that puzzle that is the Clippers. We've already seen several NBA veterans and retired NBA players calling out this kid for, I guess the best way to put it is speaking out of turn. You admire the confidence of someone that young and that with that little experience, especially in postseason NBA experience, saying, hey, yeah, we got to spread the ball around more. By the way, by that, I mean, give me the ball. It takes stones to say that, especially after a loss. But is it the right thing to do? Apparently, according to a lot of NBA veterans, no, it's not.
Like you said there, I won't beat this to death, because I think it's a good thing that when young players speak out, especially now with, you know, for example, Matt, I listened to a lot of the Bears training camp working at the Score. And those dudes in the NFL don't say anything. They don't say anything, Matt. Talk about script reading to its finest. NFL players are masterminds at this. At least in the NBA, you get a little bit of realness from some players. And some are more vocal than others, and I appreciate that. As somebody covering the league and being in sports media, you appreciate when guys are honest with you. Now, there's a time and place for honesty, and I think that's where a lot of the veterans were talking about last night, is like, man, maybe if you didn't take this to the locker room first, that's definitely what you should have. Going to the media is an interesting route. You know, if Michael Porter Jr. can back it up with dropping 20 plus per game for however long the Nuggets are still in the playoffs, good for him. Then he's making a statement and backing it up. But, I mean, if he comes out this next game and drops, single-digit points, has a terrible shooting night, mean, he's going to get side eyes from all of his teammates, from his head coaches, and criticism from the fans. So I just hope he can back it up, but I won't be too critical on guys who are willing to speak up, because I think about it in the Bulls terms, Matt. Think about how we never really heard anything from Lauri Markkanen when he was truly frustrated this year and he didn't want to step on anybody's toes. So we know the other side of it when guys don't speak out, and you can clearly see frustration building up.
Well, yeah, and that's what happens when you're trying to make a deep playoff run and you are in a 3-1 hole. Frustrations build up everywhere. And you're trying to figure out what you can do differently to flip the script of the way that the series is going. Personally, like I said, I don't think that more Michael Porter Jr. is going to help the Nuggets here, because I think that they came into this series with, you know, I guess you could say playing with house money. Congrats to them for coming back from that 3-1 deficit against Utah in round one. It was impressive. It was a lot of fun. But even though Jamal Murray is struggling in this series compared to his series, his round one series, like his points per game, his field goal percentage, it's all like it has fallen off a cliff against the Clippers. Guess what? The Clippers are one of the best defensive teams in the league. So I'm not putting the blame on Jamal Murray. Yeah, he's struggling right now. But would I rather have the ball in Jamal Murray's hands or Michael Porter Jr.'s hands as they try to you know, be the underdog and get another win or two to keep the series going against the Clippers? Give me Jamal Murray. Like, he's better.
He's proven it, too. I mean, more instances than Michael Porter Jr. has, that's for sure. So I think we're in agreement there. All right, let's get to our text messages and voicemails. Matt, let's listen to our lone voicemail first. This comes from the 847.
I was thinking a lot about you guys' conversations about trading back in the draft. And I was wondering, how far back do you think we could get? How far back in the draft could we trade back and still get some of the names you've been talking about, like Benny or Okoro or even Toppin, Obi Toppin? What do you guys think about trading back, and how far back do you think we could go safely to still get one of these guys that would kind of fit our needs?
All right. Appreciate the question from the 847. Matt, what do you think? First, I think we should pick out the teams that would be willing to move up, especially if we're talking lottery, right? So the teams behind the Bulls right now: Cavaliers, Hawks, Pistons, Knicks, Wizards, Suns, Spurs, Kings, Pelicans, Celtics. Of those teams behind the Bulls, moving as far back as you can by still grabbing the player that maybe you feel fits the Bulls the best, any of those teams stand out as potential partners for the Bulls?
I mean, maybe just to try to shake things up and feel like, because they're trying to turn a new page with a new coach, and once again, they didn't get lucky in the lottery, the Knicks might want to move up to try and nab their guy, just because they feel like they have to do something to try to keep the momentum going that they've built from, I guess, at least a new front office face and a new head coach while they're still stuck with James Dolan. But again, like, and I don't care if it's the Knicks or any other team, and I certainly don't love it for the Bulls when some Bulls fans have suggested trading up from their spot at number four. I don't think there's anyone in this class that's worth trading up for if it means sacrificing future draft capital or current young assets.
I'm cool with moving back if you understand that one of those top three guys is not falling to you at four. If one of those top three guys in either Wiseman, Ball, or Edwards is going to fall out of the top three, then I stay put. But if not, and you feel like you can get like a guy like Isaac Okoro at 8 or 9, or you feel Denny's going to fall to 7, 8, 9, or 10, and that's the guy you like, or maybe they even like guys like Tyrese Haliburton from Iowa State, or maybe they feel like Killian Hayes is going to fall to 6, 7, or 8. There's a lot of moves to be made there if you feel like the top three are split among the rest of the group from the draft. And those top three, like you're saying, are generational type of players like we've seen the last couple of years in the NBA draft. So what's really right, the worth of moving up?
Well, and I think of those names that you rattled off, some of which were the names that our caller was mentioning, the only one that I see falling, you know, beyond top seven is Haliburton. I think Halliburton's going to be a late lottery pick, maybe even fall a little bit beyond the lottery. But, you know, if the caller's question is how far back could the Bulls hypothetically trade if they don't love what's on the board at four while still nabbing one of those guys. Our caller saying, you know, Denny Avdija, Isaac Okoro, or maybe Killian Hayes. I think all three of those players are gone by pick seven or eight. I really do. That's, I think they are tier two in this weak draft class, where tier one is LaMelo, Wiseman, and Edwards. So if, to me, like you said, maybe one of those top three guys surprisingly falls to four, and then AK feels like, okay, best available, this is good value at four, we'll stay here at four, we'll pick this guy. If I'm AK, I'm staying at four if I want Denny or Okoro or Hayes, because I think if they were to trade back to 7, 8, 9, 10, those guys are going to fly off the board at picks 4, 5, and 6. That's just my guess. That's my hunch right now.
You know, I'm thinking about the team that has multiple picks in this draft, and somebody who I think could be a potential trade partner, if not with picks, just with some supporting cast the Bulls might want to move this offseason, is the Celtics, man. The Celtics have three picks in this draft. And if AK is being truthful about saying that he doesn't feel like this is a bad draft the way people are expecting it to be, he feels like there's some talent here. I mean, the Bulls could buy back into the middle of the first round if he's looking to add multiple pieces without trading that number four pick. I mean, the Celtics have a lot of holes to kind of fill if they don't quite get past this hump with Toronto. I mean, for example, you could move Otto Porter Jr. and you could get assets from the Celtics and maybe tie like a Gordon Hayward's. I know he's being paid massive money and he's been hurt a ton, but tying Gordon Hayward coming back to the Bulls, you would fill that wing role with a veteran, plus grab assets from the first round pick, whatever else they're willing to offer. I think there's a deal to be made with the Celtics if they're looking to add quality role players while also shedding a little bit of contract situation. And I think the Bulls are in a situation where they can do that too over the next couple of years while they decide on some of the players as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Celtics I could certainly see as maybe being a team that that could make a move like that. And again, I basically what I'm telling myself and what I'm telling Bulls fans who are asking about all these trade hypotheticals. And again, the crazy thing is that now, as of yesterday's news, we have a whole extra month to talk about all of this stuff, because the kind of foolishly optimistic set date for the NBA draft of October 16th or 18th or whatever it was officially got pushed back yesterday. And now the new tentative date is something in the middle of November. So basically got pushed back by a whole month. So we've got plenty of time to talk about how the Bulls might approach the number four pick and any potential draft trades. Speaking of which, Jordan, let's get to an email. This one comes to us from Kofi. Hey, guys, longtime listener from London. Love the pod. The Westbrook episode is still my favorite show ever. I don't even remember what he's talking about, Jordan. Did we have some crazy episode about Russell Westbrook?
Yeah, it was when I was standing for Russell Westbrook to become a Chicago Bull last offseason. Right, it was like right, I think maybe in September or August.
Oh,
where you and I were yelling back and forth about how Bulls fans didn't want to bring Westbrook here, and I was like, at this point, Bulls fans don't want any to trade for any star. They're gonna make an excuse for anybody, and I was standing hard for That's Westbrook, true. And he's looking good.
And I was sitting here saying, I don't want Westbrook.
Do you
see him in the playoffs right now? I know he hasn't come back from that injury for a whole lot of time. Maybe he's rusty, but man, he's running around that court like a chicken with his head cut off, man. Oh, man. Anyway, getting back to our email from Kofi in London. There's been a lot of trade scenarios yet. I don't believe I've heard any that involve the Hawks. The Hawks have a very interesting young core. John Collins there for a full year, and Trey going into year two, year three. They look like they want to take the next step. For the record, I want Zach to stay, but should the front office think for where the team is now, they would rather a young piece? Would the below framework work as a starting point? So here's the trade that Kofi proposes. Bulls get the number six pick, Clint Capella and Cam Reddish. Atlanta gets Zach, Thad Young, and Wendell. Zach and Trey defensively would be an issue for the Hawks, but Zach would take some of the pressure off Trey in terms of scoring and playmaking. Thad adds veteran experience and Wendell Carter Jr. defense and upside. Capella makes the money work and gives the Bulls a rim protector to play next to Lowry. Reddish comes in to offer young wing depth to develop. That gives the Bulls 4 and 6 to go get a Killian Hayes and either Denny or Okoro. Killian Hayes and Kobe White, Denny Avdija or Okoro at the three, Lowry and Capella in the front court is a young lineup that can develop together. Let me know if this is too many moving parts and if as a framework is off base or not. Thanks, Kofi. Jordan, I actually really like this trade hypothetical. As much as I am still fearful of getting rid of Zach when we appreciate everything he's doing for this team and he still has absolutely star potential and he's pretty much already there. Would have been an all-star season if he were on a team that didn't suck as much as the Bulls did. I like the concept of, you know, throwing Kobe into a full-time starting role, playing him and Killian Hayes together in a backcourt. Hayes is a playmaker. Kobe plays well off the ball. Either Okoro or Denny at the three. Capella and Lowry in the front court. I actually really like that lineup a lot. What about you?
It's a nice idea, but why the hell would Atlanta agree to any of that? I get...
there's the rub.
I get why that... On paper, that makes Atlanta a lot better. But there's a couple things in there that we have to keep in mind. First of all, like he had mentioned, Zach LaVine and Trae Young playing defense next to each other. Holy shit, talk about a huge opening for 30, 35-plus minutes a game where teams are just going to cook you. So, I mean, if you're willing to let teams shoot 35, 40, 50 threes against you in a game and hope they shoot under 40%, maybe you let that work. But that is a huge issue that I don't see fitting. Also, too, if you move Carter to Atlanta, why would Carter be any different about wanting to play the five in Atlanta as he's had problems here in Chicago and also made mention that he wants to move to the four? It wouldn't solve Atlanta's center issue either. I think Bruno Fernando's going to be a great player, but I don't know if they see starter potential out of him just yet. So making that move for Capella last year would have made a whole lot of sense. So those are two issues I have with the deal. I think it's fantastic for the Bulls, though.
Right. I like, and that's why I agree with you. I think the Hawks would certainly pause before making that deal. But I at least like this trade hypothetical, because compared to a lot of hypotheticals we get in our text line, like this one actually favors the Bulls. Like if AK pulled off this trade, I think it would actually be a good trade for the Bulls. Some of the trade hypotheticals and proposals we get is like, dude, why would the Bulls even want to do that? I think the Bulls maybe would be getting a little bit better of a deal here. But I just looking at that starting five of Hayes, White, and either Denny or Okoro, and then Lowry and Capella is pretty mouthwatering.
Let's go to the text at the 618. What's going on, guys? Huge fan of the podcast. I have a trade scenario for you guys to ponder. If LaMelo slips to the Bulls at number four, would you take him, no questions asked, or would you entertain a trade offer for someone like the Knicks, say the Bulls' fourth pick for the Knicks' eighth, 26th, and a player like Kevin Knox, who's still young enough where a coach with a player development background like the Bulls are looking for to hire that can turn him around? What are your guys' thoughts? Matt, thoughts on Bulls trading with the Knicks?
So interesting, because we were just talking about maybe the Knicks being a team that might be interested in trading up in, based on our previous question. So, hypothetically, yes, if you want to swap and go to eight and maybe also add their late round pick and a young player who hasn't quite figured it out yet and Kevin Knox, but there's certainly still some potential there. But to answer the primary question, I would, yes. And I would, at four, if he slips, I'm taking LaMelo Ball, no questions asked. Because I think he could be the best talent in this draft class. Yes, a shallow draft class, but he could be the best talent. He is a playmaker, and that is what the Bulls need. They would be taking best available by far, and they would be filling a position of need. So, to me, I don't think it's likely at all that LaMelo slips to four. I think there's maybe like a 0.0001% chance that that happens. If it does, if I'm AK, I am putting LaMelo's name on a piece of paper and sending it in immediately.
And that's why I said, Melo is going to be, watch me dance again.
Okay.
Number one pick, 2020.
Because
he's that good. He's that good. I can't wait for a team to say, you know what? I ain't going to pick a 6'8 point guard who's young, who put people in the seats. I'm not going to pick him number one.
LeVar.
I guarantee you do, because he that dude.
He's going number one.
That
overall.
Dude, number one.
If you're his dad, he's going number one. And hey, Minnesota might take him number one.
I think he is going number one. I honestly do.
And Matt, I think you're right, too. The more I think about it, even though I heard Matt Babcock think that he thinks that LaMelo will fall to the Bulls at number four, although he did have some reasoning that he thinks if Minnesota doesn't trade out, they might just take the player that fits them best, which would be Obi Toppin. But if Minnesota's going to do that, I think that they trade down. And I think there's a team within the top 10 that they see, they're like, okay, wait, the top three teams don't want LaMelo. Let us trade up to try and get him there at three or at two, and we'll give up a couple extra assets and make sure he doesn't fall to any of those other teams. So I think you're right. Although a lot of the reasoning, like Charlotte needs a big man, Golden State needs a big man, but all these teams, again, could trade down, and it might not cost teams at 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10 as much as it might have the last couple of years to take a shot on LaMelo. So if it's me, I'm with you too. I'm staying at four and taking LaMelo, no questions asked, and I am celebrating.
Right, yeah. You take LaMelo and you are giddy that he actually fell to you at number four. Okay, let's wrap up with this, something non-draft talk and trade related. Well, I guess it is slightly trade related, and it was the draft night trade, but still totally different topic. 702 says, even though he called out his teammates publicly, it seemed like Jimmy's problem with his past teammates was accountability. Since Tibbs left as his coach at Chicago, he had a problem with his coaches not holding his teammates accountable. My question is, was Jimmy always right? Were these teams too soft with handling his co-stars? That is a big old can of worms, Jordan, and I know that we're about to wrap up, but I thought it was a very interesting question. Obviously, Jimmy has bought in completely to Riley and Spo and Heat culture. They are sitting there waiting to see who wins Game 7 of Boston-Toronto to play them as the, I guess, underdog in the Eastern Conference Finals, seeing as how Boston and Toronto is the 3-2 series and Heat's coming in at number 5. I mean, it's crazy. Is it just that Jimmy was right all along and all these players, these younger stars he was playing with were soft? Or do you still think that there was some level of truth to the, as his popularity and talent in Chicago grew, so did his head, and prima donna Jimmy became a problem?
Yeah, I talked about this on the solo episode too a little bit, is now that I have kind of some revisionist history, there was a situation in which Butler, I think, had to make that transformation. Although you have to factor in all the front office issues that he had and everything going on here too, it was just a mix and a mess here in Chicago. And I don't know, Jimmy might be, I guess Jimmy was right in a lot of facts. The other thing I go back to is a lot of people want to criticize some Bulls fans for saying they wanted Jimmy out. They were sick and tired of him. While that's true, I feel like the majority of the Bulls fan base had to come to the realization the Bulls were never going to pay him. And it made Bulls fans sad. It made Bulls fans resent each other. And it made Bulls fans resent the Bulls for trading him away. Look, it didn't work in Minnesota. And I think a lot of his righteousness, I guess, and I guess being validated comes more from Philly than I think it does from Chicago. Because I think Philly was an absolute disaster and a mess. And I think he's more pissed off about that situation than I think even thinking about Chicago now.
Right. And look, I was actually talking with my Outsiders guys about this last night while we were watching the late night game after we watched Toronto force a game 7 and Miami's sitting there waiting. Does it say more about the genius of Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra that now with Jimmy Butler as their best player, they might be just 6 years removed from the Heatles breaking up in a completely different roster on the cusp of reaching the NBA Finals again? That is a crazy fast turnaround with a completely different roster when LeBron dips out, Wade is aging, then goes to Chicago, Bosh is hurt, early retirement, all that stuff. 6 years later, they could be back in the finals. Yeah, they're probably going to get clobbered by whichever LA team comes out of the West, but that's still incredibly impressive. Does it say more about them, or does it say more about the just shit incompetence of the Eastern Conference as a whole? And I think it's a little bit of both, but either way, did I think the Bulls were building a championship contender around Jimmy? No. Some of that is the fault of John and Gar at building rosters properly, and that's not on Jimmy. but I still don't think he's good enough to be the best player on a championship team. And also, to me, it was always about contract. Jimmy's looking pretty good right now at age 30 with this new team and buying into Heat culture. What about a few seasons from now? In the 22-23 season, when he is age 33 and with all the miles on his legs and all the minutes he's played, let's call that 34-35, and he's making $37.5 million.
Kept our flexibility long-term, which was also important to us.
That was always the part that scared the shit out of me with Jimmy. And I don't think any of that has changed from a Bulls fan's perspective.
I think you're right. And goes to show you, the Heat have been for a long time winning first, money second. And I think you see that team and that organization, especially of the last 20 years, has exposed a lot of other organizations, especially in the Eastern Conference, who have been money and business first, winning second. And the Bulls certainly have put their priorities business first and winning second over those last 20 years. And look at how quickly Miami can do things like that. Like you said, so shout out to their culture and the way that they are able. And look, they also had LeBron and D-Wade and Shaq. So there's some combination of luck and skill, a part of that culture too, that has helped them a lot. So shout out to Jimmy for keep killing it. I hope he gets to the finals, man. Crossing my fingers and rooting for him.
But I mean, you know, all these Bulls fans on Twitter, saying like, "Oh, I told you so. Oh, I told you so." The Jimmy haters in Chicago. We should have never traded Jimmy. Look at what the Heat are doing. Okay, it's not just Jimmy. Yes, he's great. But look at all of the other diamond in the rough talent that they found. Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. I mean, like, you have to credit the organization as well as Jimmy the player for the fact that Miami's on the brink of going back to the finals after 6 years after the Heatles broke up. Just because I'm an asshole and Schadenfreude is a real big trigger for me, I will enjoy watching, if they do get to the finals, watching Jimmy and the Heat just get slaughtered by the Lakers and the Clippers.
Are you going to play devil's advocate?
Oh, man. It would be a shot to Jimmy's ego, at least. But at least, hey, I mean, flip side of that, he could say, hey, I made a finals and nobody thought I was going to be able to do that on my own.
Right, yeah. And you know what? I'd just be sitting here jealous, being like, crap, how many games did the Bulls just lose? What did we just spend a season watching?
We've added Jerian Grant, who we talked about.
Good Lord.
I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks again for listening. Thanks to our sponsors today in DoorDash and in RockAuto.com. Check both of them out. When you support our sponsors, you're supporting Locked On Bulls and you're supporting us as podcasters. And we appreciate everybody out there subscribed, listening, interacting with the show. You can hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Shoot us a text, drop us a voicemail. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So anytime you're listening and you've got a burning Bulls thought, hit us with a text or a voicemail at 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow to drive you into the weekend. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
You use your IG name to intro Jalen.
Thanks a lot. Did you hear about Odell Beckham?
No. No question. With all due respect.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com